just a long warning that we will be discussing colonialism, slavery, death, erasure, being forgotten, existentialism, exploitation, unrequited and requited love, falling, diving, plunging, drowning, contagious illnesses, looking, despairing, fires, protests, all sorts of shit. So if you're not in the right headspace for that, maybe just skip these next bunch of episodes. Ooh, you love me. Ooh, you love me.
Welcome to another episode of A Hopeless Endeavor, a Joanna Newsom podcast. I'm Sam.
I am Nikki, and this is part three of Sapokonikin.
Three of a million?
Three of a million. Correct. We are not even through the first verse after the first two.
Surprised is no one.
Surprised is no one. And we have a bunch of shit to say again. Almost certainly won't make it to the end of the song today.
And that's good because I'm not prepared till the end of the song.
That's okay. I'm pretty sure we have a bunch of content before then. So, or to get us through. So did you have thoughts that rolled over from last recording, Sam, or preliminary thoughts or anything that you wanted to get into?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think the only thing was that I added something else to our list.
Oh.
And that was, how is this a love song?
Oh, that's right.
Because I re-listened to, I think, our first Divers episode. And one of the interviews that you had mentioned was, in one of the interviews that you mentioned, she had said something about every song being a love song. Hmm. So that's on our list now. And there was one other thing. Maybe how each of our narrators experience time.
Mm, I like that. I think you had texted me too, or maybe you said this and I'm just like not remembering correctly. Something about either the land being a narrator or time being a narrator that you had added to the list. But I could be misremembering that.
I'm going to scroll through our text, but feel free to talk about other things.
Okay. Well, so when I was editing the last two episodes sort of frantically before, it's been a long time since I've done this, but it was Friday and I was editing the episode for the next morning. Normally there's a much longer time in between editing and posting for the Patreon people, but I've just been a little behind. And we had said, we were like speculating about the Lenape people coming before the Dutch people in living on and like quote unquote owning that land, and the Dutch people coming before the English people where it turned into New York. And we had both like sort of speculated or just like asked the question of like, who do you think came before the Lenape people? Like probably they weren't the first people on that piece of land either. And we're like, who knows? Well, I did a little bit of research. Amazing. And thought I would share it. So one thing I thought was super interesting. First, just research about the Lenape people. Is that they were matrilineal. So from what I gather, that just means that their heritages were traced through the mother's side. So like they would pass down their name and gain their reputation from the mother's family rather than it being patriarchal or patrilineal. And they were also matrilocal, meaning that families would stay with the mother's side. So like if I got married to a dude, that guy would come live with me and like my clan, which would just be like my mother's side of the family. And so like that's how clans were arranged. And I thought that that was interesting. I mean, just in and of itself, because yay for, I don't think it's a matriarchal society because the power dynamics weren't such that the women were in charge of everything. Although I did read that the women were in charge of managing the agriculture. So mm-hmm. They were in charge of like allotting land, which is also really interesting in contrast to every to what we're used to in a patriarchal society. But what was I going to say? Oh, I thought it was just interesting in the context of throughout this song, we're talking about a bunch of histories being erased. And later in the song, we're going to talk about a bunch of like original paintings being painted over or like meanings being hidden within paintings. And in those examples, it's the women who get painted over. And I thought that was interesting, just that there is this like society who traces their heritage by the women in their lives, by the mothers in their lives. And like that is just in keeping with the tone of women being erased later on in the song.
I also really like the idea that it's women who are in charge of agriculture, who were probably in charge of agriculture, because that holds a lot of power. And I know this is like an OG Melissa Marchuano post idea, but I know we've talked a lot about women being tied to the land and men being tied to the sea and the freedom that men have because of that and the limits that are placed on women because of that. So that's, you know, very thematic with stuff we've talked about.
I didn't even think of that, but that's a great comparison to make, that women are tied to the land, especially in this album. Okay, so then also, I'm sure this is history that a lot of you guys do know, but I was just reading a little bit about how in the 1830s, Andrew Jackson, like the guy who's on the American $20 bill, signed an Indian removal policy, quote unquote, which involved the forced displacement of Eastern self-governing Native American tribes. So like from the, like what is now New York, to like where is roughly Oklahoma, I was reading. So this is like the Trail of Tears sort of era. And I was reading that there were about, over the course of like two decades-ish, there were about 60,000 Native Americans, including thousands of Native Americans, black slaves, which I didn't even know that Native American people had owned black slaves, or quote unquote owned, or enslaved people, but they did. And thousands of both Native Americans and the enslaved people died as a result, obviously, in the Trail of Tears. But that's sort of what drove the Lenape people out of the area, out of the New York City area. Okay. And so then I was reading like, okay, like what came before the Lenape people were there? And, basically what I got was that before the Lenape and Iroquois people, were in that ish region of land, there were a collection of people called the Mound Builders. Have you heard of the Mound Builders, Sam?
Yeah,
me neither. I hadn't heard of this at all, but it's so cool. So it doesn't refer to like a specific tribe of Native Americans. It just refers to like whoever happened to be occupying that piece of land. We don't know a lot about them, but like the thing that marks them, what's the word? Anthropologically, is that they used to build all sorts of mounds for these different purposes. So I was reading that like some, and this is like not just in the New York area, it's like across the Midwest and a bunch of the eastern parts of the country, but that there would just be like these like big and small mounds that people would build. Sometimes it was like 100 or even up to thousands of workers would just build these like big piles of land, sort of, so like changing the landscape. And I was reading they can be used for residence, they could be used for burials, they could be used for other rituals. And I thought it was super interesting that they were often used as monuments. So these piles of land were the earliest monuments that we know of, at least in North America. And just in the context of this song, I thought that was so cool because like the land literally gets leveled and beveled first before the Lenape people are even there. There are these like monuments, which is obviously a big theme in the song, that just get plowed through.
No, that's incredible. And I was just looking at the Wikipedia page as you were talking and looking at some of these structures. And in one of these like very cartoony diagrams, they note that like mounds were built on top of prior structures, which is like incredible within the context of this song and the layering that we've talked about, and just like the physical, like the built manifestations of the passage of time.
Cool. Super cool. And like another theme along those lines in keeping with the song is that because we know so little about the people that built these mounds, there's like a bajillion theories about A, like the origins of the people, and B, what the monuments were for. And so like seriously, like just like completely like a vast array of different theories about like what this could have been from, but like none of them are necessarily grounded in like the most solid of facts. But it just reminded me of like the rewriting of things that we do as humans to like suit our purposes rather than to represent, you know, the true story of what was. Yeah,
that's cool. Thank you for researching that. That's all I could find.
You're very welcome. Super fun to look into, even though it was very overwhelming. There's tons of information, obviously, that you could get into about this. And then I'm pretty sure that before the mound builders, I mean, almost maybe by definition, it was just the Ice Age. It was just nothing except for ice.
Yeah, I have some tabs open for different periods of glaciation. I don't remember why, but I'm sure my notes will remind me when we get there.
Yay. Okay, cool. I'm excited then. Yeah, because like snow is a theme, I think, on the song. Anyway, yeah, we'll get to it. What was I going to say? That I was also just reading that they think that the mound builders got here via a piece of land that was at the time raised between Alaska and I want to say Russia, right? Is that the thing that she references in Waltz? I think it's Waltz. Or she said the Bering Strait. Is that mm-hmm. what that is? I don't know. Anyway, so okay, that was one thing I had. I also had something about just the rhyme scheme, which I know we had talked about a little bit either last episode or the first one on Sabaconican, but I found this quote in The Stranger where the person like lays out the rhymes in a way that I found helpful just because the rhyme structure wasn't super obvious to me. But here's a quote from The Stranger. So they write, "You can hear the internal rhyme in cause and Oz from Ozymandian, in map and sap, Boconican, in sand and land." And then the end rhyme is obviously Andean, like Ozymandian and Sapoconican. So the Andean and Anakin rhyming together, which I somehow didn't even notice, but that's an incredible rhyme. Yeah, it's
like a syllable rhyme.
Yeah. And then beveled and leveled. And then they write that the exact same pattern continues in the next four lines. So hand reaches back to land and sand. Mon from monument returns to the Oz from Ozymandian. God returns to cause. And bag and rag recall map and sap. It's a rhyme scheme I've never seen before. Okay. So I thought I would just point that out just in case anybody else wasn't as adept at identifying rhyme schemes.
It's really cool. It's like a rhyme of the like open vowels.
Yeah.
Only Oz and cause, sand and land. I don't think I really noticed that connection either too. That's really cool.
I was also looking at it, just trying to like figure out what else could rhyme. And we got, me and my partner David were doing that. And we got along with mon from monument and upon. Mm-hmm. Really cool though. Okay. That's all I have before we get into the next like the actual lyrics.
Yeah, I don't think I have anything either.
Okay, cool.
So last time, I believe we ended at "By Some Unrecorded and Powerful Hand."
Yes, ma'am.
So I'll just read the next few lines, which are, "Which plays along the monument and drums upon a plastic bag, the brave men and women so dear to God and famous for all of the ages rag." Just a note that on the official lyrics, "from brave men and women to for all of the ages rag" is italicized. I don't know if you can see.
Yes.
And
is it hyphenated too?
It's not hyphenated, but it's capitalized as a title.
Wait, so like brave is capitalized, men, women.
Yeah. Okay. So dear God, famous for all ages rag.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Is it famous for all the ages or famous to?
In this lyric, it's famous for all of the ages rag.
Interesting. In my head, it was famous to all of the ages. But I think I just might be misremembering. I don't think she sings that. Now that you say that. Actually, I don't know.
I'd have to listen to it.
Interesting that that's all italicized. And then is rag unitalicized?
No. Rag is part of the capitalization scheme.
Italicization. Okay. Okay. And then that's the end of the first verse.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. In the lyrics with the vinyl, that the first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 9 lines are all one verse.
Okay.
So we tried to get through it all last time, but that wasn't.
Okay. So what do you think, Samantha?
Oh, boy. So my first notes are just like a small list of the monuments we've mentioned so far, now adding like the monuments of the mound builders to that. So that of Ramesses, as mentioned in the Ozymandias poem, and then really just the one, the monument in Washington Square Park that's been mentioned by many sources, including Cultured Arm, Genius, and then in the music video, Joanna's sitting in that part of the park as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the monument in Washington Square Park is the Washington Square Arch, which was erected in a specific kind of marble in 1892 to mark the centenary of the inauguration of George Washington as president. And the arch bears the inscription, "Let us raise a standard to which the wise and the honest can repair. The event is in the hand of God. Which was from a speech that he gave in 1787. So I think probably there's a connection there to powerful hand somehow.
So there are a bunch of disembodied hands in this song.
Yeah. Can we add that to the list? Disembodied hands? Sure.
So it was erected, the monument, in 1887. Is that right?
That's what I have in my after. Notes.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, 100 years after George Washington, what, gave the speech? Is that it? Okay.
Yeah, I think so. Sorry, 1892 it was erected.
Oh, 1892. Okay.
Square.
Yeah, so we have the mounds as monuments, the Ozymandias statue as a monument. We have the Washington Square Park monument. I think later in the song, too, there's, if not a reference to, there's at least a monument around Washington Square Park, I think, if not just in Greenwich Village, that, actually, I think it is just in Greenwich Village, not the park, that memorializes John Perry Mitchell. There's, I believe I was reading today that there's a reference to some steel guy in Washington Square Park, some guy who, like, I don't know, manufactured steel or something.
Oh, from our texts, the other thing was, how is this song a love song, and what are the binaries working together and or pulling apart this song?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I think this song is totally a love song. Or like, you know, at least partly. I think it's way too simplistic to boil it down to just one thing. But do you get the love songness?
In what way?
Well, I think that just the asking of the question, which we'll get to, like the do you love me, will you remember part, plays on like two levels. I think it plays, well, because like one, maybe we'll get to this when we get to it, but it, I think at least, is referencing this musical about these like two lovers. And in the musical version, the do you love me, I think it's actually will you love me in the musical, and will you remember, are not in this like big existential question sort of frame, but rather in this very interpersonal frame, which is like one person asking the other person, like, do you love me? Will you remember me? Which I think is like sort of a thesis statement of a lot of divers in general, is that like there is this echoing, this like macro and microcosm sort of thing happening, where like the larger existential, will we be remembered in time, like that whole, you know, debacle, that whole question on this like really like macrocosmic level being mirrored in this microcosmic level, and like in the dynamic of people's relationships.
I don't disagree that it's a love song at all. I think I just tend towards the macro in that sense. I just think I like the idea more of this, like, will you love me? Do you love me? Being echoed across the ages. And will you remember? Like, I, as you said, we'll get there when we get there. But what a great question, because probably not.
No, probably not. So last time, when I was editing again, just like re-listening to what we were saying, I think we were veering on the probably not side of things. Like probably, no, you probably won't be remembered because everything fucking gets erased.
Yeah.
But something I read today made me sort of question that analysis. And like, I'm not sure. I don't know what I think, but they were at least putting forth the idea that maybe it's the opposite, that like, no matter how hard we try to erase certain histories, like they keep pushing through. So like that, we're able to discover who was hidden underneath the paintings that we'll get to. If you don't know what we're talking about, just sorry, hang tight. That we know that the Lenape people were here, even though like colonizers really tried to erase them. Like they're still pushing through if you, you know, sit and look for a second. So I like that idea too, that like you can't quite erase everything no matter how hard you try. Like we'll keep pushing.
I like the idea of it being like a cyclical thing too. Like even if this cycle of it isn't remembered, maybe the next one will be.
Yeah.
That's a lovely idea. It's a very comforting thing to think that you might be remembered. But I also find comfort in being forgotten. Like, that's totally fine too.
Well, I had this question for you. I wasn't sure where I was going to bring it up, but like, I don't know. Let's just do it here because who knows what the structure of today is.
Yeah, no structure.
Like, why? So like all of this, I was reading too. Actually, like this sort of ties in. So I was reading about drumming and I was thinking like, why is she using the word drum here exactly? And we can get into theories, but wait, I'm going to lose my thought. Yeah. So then I was reading about drum symbolism for the Lenape people and for Native American tribes in particular. And I was reading that, some Lenape people, the way that they like tied the strings to the contour of the drum, like to the base of the drum to make like the skin taut, the way that they did that would be in like a 7-point star formation. And it would be really sacred because it would represent, this specific star formation would represent their ancestors and would like serve as a reminder that their ancestors are there. And that just got me thinking like, why is it so important for us culturally, like across cultures, not culturally, as people, as humans, to be remembered? Like, why do we care about that? Because I feel the intuition on the one hand. Like, I feel the intuition that like, oh my God, if like my entire life is forgotten, like what is this all for? But like, I know I'm not going to be remembered. Like why? I don't know. What do you think? What are your intuitions about it?
Like, why do people want to be remembered?
Yeah. Like, what does that give us if we're dead, but people remember us?
Okay. So in the greater scheme of things, at least in my opinion, we are insignificant little specks of dust. And I think that maybe people like to be remembered because it gives a little more meaning to that, like whether you have faith in, you know, some kind of greater power or not. To be remembered at the very least is some kind of like confirmation of your little speck of dustness.
Yeah, that makes it like a slightly bigger speck of dust.
Yeah, or at least one that like, I don't know, is recognizable amongst others.
Yeah.
I don't know. I also don't think that like any of my ideas are original. So like I don't see the significance in being remembered for myself,
it's a common enough thing. I think that like most people feel like pretty existential dready at the idea that they're just going to be forgotten within like a couple of generations too. Like it's sad, but like, I don't know. I know next to nothing about like my great grandmother, which is like only a couple generations removed from me. Like I know next to nothing about her. She's from Ukraine. Like that's as much as I could tell you really. I've met her and stuff, but just that like, yeah, that your life would just like mean so little, I guess. But I don't know. I guess I'm just sort of struggling with the idea that it would mean more if someone just like remembered you. Well, maybe not. Like just the idea that like you made a difference in someone's life and like that difference was worth remembering and passing down. Like it makes you feel more special and more, yeah, like you said, like more significant.
That's the fucked up thing about time though, right? Because regardless of who you are significant in the present moment, but that disappears the second that you're gone.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it really
what
does.
Are you doing to us? What is happening?
What is happening? I think I read her say somewhere that like, I don't remember where this would have been, but like that a really meaningful way for her at least to be remembered is like the effect that we can have on the people around us and like the children that we raise, and like if we can, you know, form somebody into being like a good and kind human, then like hopefully that'll have like an enduring effect that's passed on through the generations, even if you're not credited with that work, which I think you could like add a gendered lens to that as well, like that the women are at home doing the domestic labor and like their work will be passed on through the kindness and like through the ways that not necessarily kindness, through the different ways that we raise our children. And there's no credit in that. Like it's a very thankless job as opposed to like the men who are out conquering and like trying to do like these like quote unquote big things to get their names, you know, memorialized forever. But like, it's less clear that that has an actual bigger impact. I don't know. I have lots of thoughts.
And I guess it depends on how we define an impact too, right? Like, uh-huh. Like you said, like raising empathetic beings is impactful. And the way that that makes change is probably less visible, is definitely less visible, but maybe has more of an effect on history than we give it credit for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm also just like a by the book millennial, and I have absolutely no hope for the future and like no, I don't know. I've made peace with the fact that like, if this is it for humans, this is it. And that's fine.
Yeah, I vacillate between that, which I very much feel and like is super understandable, and the idea that like my partner's kid, who is 17, is like so much more empathetic and tender and like sensitive than your average person was in my generation. And I think that that's not just like she is an exceptional kid, but I think that she's not exceptional in the sense that I think that a lot of her peers are like that too. And so like mm-hmm. in that sense, I'm like, well, like there is some progress being made, but yeah, yeah, it depends, I guess, what you mean by progress. All in all, things are probably doomed. interpersonally, though, at least people can be nicer to each other. You know, like,
yeah. Okay. Okay. What do you think about a plastic bag? Where does that come from?
Oh, Lord. Okay. Where are we here? So, right. So we're talking about the powerful hand which plays along the monument and drums upon a plastic bag.
Yeah. So the first sentence of this verse, the cause is Ozymandian, period. Yeah. And then we don't have a period for the next eight lines. Okay, so this is right. One giant run-on sentence.
Right.
So the map of Sapochnigan is sanded and leveled, the land lone and leveled by this hand, this unrecorded mm-hmm. and powerful hand, which also, I'm assuming, plays along the monument and drums upon a plastic bag.
Yes. I think that these two lines, because we were speculating about this last time, I think that these two lines might give us a little bit of a hint that we were right-ish to be wondering or thinking or speculating that the hand, the unrecorded and powerful hand in question, is time. Mm-hmm. Because if that's the thing, it's playing along the monument, as in it's like still wearing down the monument, even though like what a monument is meant to like buck against time and its mm-hmm. effects, right? It's meant to like withstand the ages so that we'll remember. It's like this like just like slab of stone in the middle of everything being like, remember, remember, remember. It's like such a call to that. But yeah. Time is, yeah, go ahead.
No. I just like that remember, remember, remember.
Yeah, it's just like beckoning at us to remember whatever it's commemorating. But time is still just sort of like, I love the word play because it's both reminiscent of the drum that comes in the next line or like the music or like the rhythm of time. Mm-hmm. But also play also reminds me of the way that like a cat plays with a mouse before it kills it. Like it's just like, I'm just sort of toying with you. Like time doesn't care that we want people to remember a certain thing that we're commemorating. Time's just like, I don't know, like I'll let you stick around for a while, but like not for forever. I'm gonna still wear you down.
Not for forever, which yeah. is so beautifully shown in the Ozymandias poem too.
Yeah.
I thought the mention of plastic was interesting because, you know, at least in my knowledge, that's something that lasts pretty much forever.
Yes.
So that contrasted with a monument made of something that is not plastic is kind of like a funny, ironic play on words there. I don't know.
And the idea that like time's just like slowly working on it, slowly working on this plastic bag, slowly yeah. working on the monument, these exactly. two enduring things.
Yeah.
One is like totally disposable. Like that's another cool contrast here. Maybe this is what you were talking before about like contrasting forces. Yeah, like pulling the song tight. And maybe here's one, it might be a stretch, but like a monument is something so intentional and so like we're putting this here so that people remember we're carving it out of stone, like it's very good. And then a plastic bag is something so disposable yes. That like no one knows and no one thinks twice about, but both are these like enduring things.
Fuck yeah, Nikki, you got it. I love it. So good. Intention.
Yeah, just tension, exactly, tension between those things.
Intention too, intention and memory.
Yeah.
What is, I'm typing, what is remembered is not always intentional.
Right, exactly. That, like, people don't have the kind of control that we would like to think that we have over what gets remembered. And so, like, I don't know enough about, like, history or, like, archaeology to know an example of this, but I'm sure there are things where, like, yes, there are some monuments that we know about because they were intentionally there, and, like, some artifacts of, like, prehistoric living that just, like, happened to endure that no one meant for anyone to find later. But it's just, like, one of those things that we used in everyday life that, like, oh, turns out it survived millennia, and, like, we're able to glean something from it.
Shit that people find, like, should have been an archaeologist. I feel like I would have a more positive outlook on life if I was an archaeologist.
Why? Wait, explain that thought.
Because I feel like you're able to, like, in a really fun way, solve mysteries. I mean, I don't want to pull out, like, mummies and shit. I don't want to find human. I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
I like the mystery part, though. That is super cool. You, like, have to figure out what the fuck this was for.
And also that you're a random person who's stumbling upon these unintentional remnants of human life from so long ago. Like, I'm not thinking of, like, you know, people who were intentionally buried with items or aspects or whatever. I'm thinking of, like, you know, if people survive thousands of years from now, like, finding plastic bags or, like, yeah, an iPod or, like, a fucking whisk. I don't know. Like,
yes.
And then you're trying, like,
what the fuck was this for?
Yeah. Like, what an interesting task that is.
Super cool. Like, I would have no idea about how to go about solving that mystery, but it's so cool that people can. Yeah.
I don't know. And that just, it's just a really nice connection, thinking of those random things to the past. Like, that gives me, like, warm, fuzzy feelings. Whereas, yeah, like, you know, I don't know, digging up other stuff very much does not, some things should stay in the ground.
Yeah, that's probably definitely true. But, like, it is kind of, like, I don't mean romantic as in, like, you know, two people in love, but, like, there's, yes, something nice about the idea that, like, we as humans, I feel this way about a bunch of academia, like, a bunch of subjects that we research, that humans, like, not always, obviously, there are huge glaring exceptions that we've talked about in our discussion of Subconican, but, like, sometimes humans are interested in the activity of other humans just for the sake of learning, like, just, mm-hmm, for the sake of knowing about what those humans did. We're, like, interested enough to, you know, dedicate entire fields in university to, like, figuring out, like, what were these people up to? And so, like, it is kind of nice that, like, it just seems like a kind of thing to do to remember people in that way, or to, like, try to remember them, or to try to understand who they were and how they're different from us.
Yeah, just try to, you know, build that puzzle from generations and generations.
Yeah,
apart is really romantic, I, yeah, think.
Totally.
And maybe that's just, like, this feels like a really unwieldy discussion.
No, it totally does. It totally does.
Maybe, like, that's part of the romance that she's talking about. Mm. Like, that we have to try and, not even that we have to try, that when we do try and solve these puzzles from forever ago, that is kind of, that's a type of love. That's,
yeah.
Oh, God. I'm just, like, debating my love-hate relationship with humans.
Do this. Wait, I love your theory, though, that's part of, like, the romance involved in some of these songs, particularly in Subconican, that, like, it's a love letter to our former selves and our the people who used to live here and
just
who had entire
in
lives.
In general, and those, and, you know, yeah, lived experience and the fucking struggle.
Yes.
Hoy.
The fucking struggle. Yes. Also, love, hate humans. Both those things. Yeah. There's another tension, the love and hate relationship with humans. Like, stop fucking colonizing everything. Also, oh, it's nice to remember everybody, and it's nice that we do that to each other, and it's nice that we try to be remembered and, like, leave little, I don't know, breadcrumbs to figure us all out.
Yeah, that is what it is. It is breadcrumbs across, like, spans of time. That's crazy. I wonder if anyone's ever written, like, a Hansel and Gretel sci-fi.
Oh, my God. Do it right now, Sam. That's a brilliant idea. I love that thought.
I'm sure they have. I'm sure that exists.
Okay, yeah, you're right. This does feel like an unwieldy discussion.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah, sorry.
This is where we are. That's
what's going to happen. There's just no stopping it now.
What do you think? People out there listening?
Yeah, what do you guys think?
How do you feel about people? How do you feel about time? Is it romantic? Let us know.
I know. I want to know that too. Guys, talk to us. Let us know. You, right now.
Help us out of this hole we've dug.
Okay. I also read on Genius that when the drums come in, like, so she says, and drums upon a plastic bag, and, like, at the drums part, the drums come in. I was reading on Genius, the person described the drums as sort of sounding militant, which is sort of a harbinger for the war imagery that we get in Waltz of 101st Lightborn, but also the war stuff going on in Anecdotes that we've already talked about, but that is maybe, like, lurking in the background of this song. I was also thinking about, so this is, like, maybe a stretch, maybe not. It's so hard to limit the scope of this discussion because there's just, like, so many rabbit holes. But one of the things I was thinking about was, like, okay, why the word drum? I already told you about, like, the Lenape. Mm-hmm. Also, one thing I found about the Lenape people and drums is that drums were, like, their primary instrument. Like, there occasionally were, like, other woodwinds, but, like, really, like, they were unnecessary and not always used, but, like, a drum was always used and a human voice was always used in Lenape music. I was also reading that, like, we really don't know a lot about what that sounded like because there was no recorded, even I don't mean just audio recordings, but, like, written recordings of Lenape music. It was all an oral tradition, so we're not certain about what that sounded like, which I thought was interesting given the context of the song. But I was also just looking into the idea that, like, I was like, isn't there some expression where, like, time is connected with drums somehow? Like, I was trying to, like, think, is it, like, time drums along? And then I was like, no, it's time marches along. And there's, like, marches to the beat of your own drum. But that seems like a very tenuous connection. But I don't know. I was just, like, reading a little bit about it, and, like, rhythm, any kind of rhythm just is the repetition of something, like, through time. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's as much of a connection as I could make. Oh, I also read that, sorry, the Lenape people would think of drums as the heartbeat of the earth, which I thought was interesting. But that's as much as I could get.
I think, too, that just, like, the beats and rhythms of the drum that are being used in the past is something that is part of that oral tradition that would be passed on. Speaking of breadcrumbs from, you know, throughout the ages. So that's really interesting. And just that, like, rhythm is one way of telling time.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And that, like, if we're going with the Native American thought that, or, like, we're thinking, keeping that in mind, that the drum beat can be thought of as, like, the heartbeat of the earth, or even that, even the, like, very Native American thought that, like, the earth has its own spirit, that, like, nature has its own spirit. We had talked a little bit last time about the idea of the land itself as being, if not a narrator, like, a witness to the events that are all unfolding, that, like, there is no one that endures as long as this land does. And so, like, the land as its own character. Yeah, it just, these are not tightly held together thoughts, but thoughts that I had about drums upon a plastic bag.
Okay. So I went down some weird rabbit holes trying to find out what the last few lines were about. So I was trying to find something that made sense with the title of Brave Men and Women So Dear to God and Famous for All of the Ages Rag.
Yes.
I was like, is this a painting? Is this a song?
Yeah.
My note says capitalization here is so weird. Is this the title of something?
Yeah.
So, okay, let me get organized here.
Can I ask, is rag capitalized?
Yes.
Interesting. Okay.
So the first thing that I found in my Googling is this collection of essays, this like, I don't really know what it is, but it's called The Project Gutenberg ebook of Brave Men and Women by O.E. Fuller. So, did you see this?
No.
So, it's not especially interesting, except for the piece of art that it uses. Here, maybe I can share my screen with you.
Okay.
Technology. Oh, you're the host. You got to give me permission.
Oh, yeah.
Doy. I don't
know how to do this.
So, this collection of essays, which says they were released in 2004, but were obviously written a long time before then. There's like some things by Abigail Adams and Benjamin Franklin, and maybe it's just like a collection of speeches. John Plowman. This one says, my uncle Toby. Like, interesting collection of things, but
it's called what, sorry?
Here, I'll send you the link. The Project Gutenberg Book of Brave Men and Women.
Okay.
I'll send you. Okay. None of this matters except for the art that is used on the first page of this ebook, which led me down a bit of a rabbit hole. It is very clearly some kind of like Roman, some kind of mythologized art. And the caption of it is, brave sons and daughters of time, pause not on their journey sublime. Time with a capital T. So I was like, and this art does not belong to this weird collection of essays. I shouldn't say weird, this interesting collection of essays. But it is a painting called The Aurora, which is a large Baroque ceiling fresco painted in 1614.
Wow.
In Rome. The work is considered the artist's, whose name is, I'm going to say Guido. It could be Guido Reni. It's considered his masterpiece. And I'll send you this to. And it's an incredible painting.
Wow.
And what did I want to say about it? I think I wanted to talk about Aurora herself.
Yay.
So, sorry guys, this is an audio thing. So it's a painting that has on the right side some mountains, some daybreak, And then a person heading towards the daybreak. It looks like they're carrying some sort of wreath. And then to the left, in the middle of the painting, there is like an angel with a flame. There's some horses that are being held and followed by many women. It looks like a guy on horseback as well. And what does it say about this? So the ceiling fresco, blah, 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 depicts from right to left, Aurora Dawn, who's known as Dawn, in a golden billowing dress with her garlands flying over a dim-lit landscape, leading a blonde Apollo in his horse-drawn chariot, surrounded by a chain of female hours, bringing light to the world. It could also be described as the triumph of Apollo led by the Aurora. Above these people in the sky flies the Puto, so a child, phosphorus with a torch. And then you can see winds on either side. So because I love all of these mythologies, here's a little bit about Aurora. So this is from Roman mythology. She is known as the personification of dawn, and there's a beautiful painting by William Adolphe Bourgeot from 1881 on her Wikipedia page, and it says, in Roman mythology, Aurora renews herself every morning and flies across the sky, announcing the arrival of the sun. And it talks a little bit about her family. So she could be the daughter of Pallas or the daughter of Hyperion. She has two siblings, a brother, Sol the Sun, and a sister, Luna the Moon. Okay, I think that's all that I had to say about that, really. But I thought it was incredibly interesting in that painting that hours were personified as women.
Yeah.
And that Aurora was bringing in the change of day that, again, yeah, a woman was in charge of that, was yeah, in control of that. And Apollo's there, but he's not the one leading the way here, for sure.
That's really cool. What is Apollo the god of again?
I don't remember.
Is it war? Because that would be super interesting.
God of oracles, healing, archery, music and arts, sunlight, knowledge, herds and flocks, and protection of the young.
Wow, that's a lot. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Very interesting. I'm so into learning more about Greek and Roman mythology for this. Yeah. I know that in Time as a Symptom, she like explicitly references some Greek myths. And so to think that that might be sprinkled throughout the rest of the album, I don't think is a stretch.
His sister is Persephone.
Whose sister is Persephone? Apollo's. Oh, no way.
Welcome back, Persephone.
We'll say it again.
Welcome back, Persephone.
Welcome back, Persephone. We missed you. Yeah, I think it's Persephone and Demeter, I think, that get referenced in Time as a Symptom. At least them. I think there are more too, like their horses. Yeah, really, really cool. Love the idea of women as hours or hours as women, ushering things through while like in the painting, Apollo like sits on chariot and it like at first glance you might think that he's doing like the steering, as you said, but really it's like women, Aurora, and all the hours that are doing the actual like carrying forth. So yeah, that's really cool. Have you heard of the book, Sam, called The Song of Achilles?
No, I haven't. Should
I just have? Well, no, I don't think so. I like, not because it's bad, just because I don't think that it's like well known enough, but I just started reading it this week, audiobook reading it, and I am so into it because it is giving me like a bunch of Greek mythology in this like accessible way. Like it's written in, I think, 2011 or something, or published in 2011. And I'm learning a whole bunch about like a bunch of Greek gods, and I have to keep pausing it to like read up on the characters because it's so interesting to me. But there's already like so many Joanna connections that my little puny brain can't help but make. So that's just to say that, like, put a pin in this. I'm sure I'll be referencing the Song of Achilles a bunch of times in order to like give some half-baked idea about a Greek connection, a Greek mythology connection.
I look forward to it.
Okay. Let's see here.
Okay. All of that was to say, that's an interesting like side note, all of this Aurora stuff. But I could not find anything, and please tell me if I'm wrong, that explicitly referenced the brave one, men and women so dear to God.
I couldn't find anything on that either. Yeah, you guys help us if you know what this could be a reference to exactly. But the way that I read the sentence is that she is referring to... So, okay, wait. So a rag, I meant to look up a definition for this. So obviously she's not talking about rag as in a rag. Hang on. That sentence doesn't make sense unless you're my brain. Okay, so... I'm trying to find the definition that would correspond with like ragtime music, you know?
A composition in ragtime?
Yeah. So what defines ragtime then? Let's see here. Yeah, right. So, okay. Exactly what you said. I found a ragtime composition or tune, but then what about ragtime? It's a musical style. So ragtime is a musical style that enjoyed its peak popularity between 1895 and 1919. Its cardinal trait is that it is syncopated or ragged rhythm. Ragtime was popularized, right. So it was an immediate precursor to jazz. And a bunch of the shit that I read about... people just describing the musicality of Sapokonikan describe it as ragtimey. So even though I don't really know that sound super well, other people do and are able to compare Sapokonikan to it. So anyways, I assume that that's what she means by rag here.
Do you I was not thinking think so? Of it more. I don't think that's wrong. Obviously I would, I just feel like, first of all, I have no fucking idea. Second of all, because it's the words before it are famous to all of the ages rag, it makes me think more of the definition that's related to like a newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And like want to think about things that like news traveling over time. But then what does being famous mean in that sense? Like I don't... And maybe it's some kind of statement. Okay, so who are the brave men and women so dear to God?
Great question.
So I think my brain was going to very generally those that have been lost. So whether they're lost by natural causes, whether they're lost in war, whether we're referencing brave men and women. This is another binary I'm just noting here. Whether their deaths were, well, I guess all deaths are intentional time. The fuck am I trying to say? Are we referencing... Okay, sorry. For me, the brave men and women so dear to God is everyone. Like, that's all of us.
Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think you might be right. Because, like, why would God... Because, like, we are dear to God. If God exists, God loves people, right?
That's what thing. I thought. I mean, I don't know God very well. But I'd like to think that they're pretty chill. They, you know...
I don't know God very well either.
If we're moving along that train of thought, why bring us here if we are not deer? Come on. But then I don't know what the next line's about. And famous to all of the ages.
Famous to all of the ages. Is that just a statement on like remembering? So if it's like all of us, is it just a statement on like, look, we're going to push through like trying to be painted over and we're going to be remembered because we're so insistent on this. And that's like how we're famous, is that people will know about us. Or is it something else that I can't think of?
The notes that I have here say, this was like 2 weeks ago me, so let's be patient with her for a sec. I think these two lines refer to like the glory that we give to soldiers and those in a physical battle versus the idea that those who lost. No, that doesn't make sense. So like contrasting dying for a cause, capital C, versus dying in general. Mm-hmm. And that maybe there's some kind of value judgment on that with so dear to God. Like, you are more dear to God if you happen to die in one way than another. I also have the note that braveness is something that's earned. I don't know about that.
I just found online as I was just sort of Googling, like, different combinations of the words, this John Milton quote. So it goes, inflamed with the study of learning and the admiration of virtue, stirred up with high hopes of living to be brave men and worthy patriots, dear to God and famous to all ages.
Oh, who's John Milton?
He's an author, I believe. I have heard of the name and embarrassingly don't know anything. He was an English poet and intellectual who served as a civil servant for the Commonwealth of England. So a poet is what I'm taking. Oh, he wrote Paradise Lost. Interesting. Ooh, why is the Paradise Lost in that story? I don't know. So yeah, that quote again is, inflamed with the study of learning and the admiration of virtue, stirred up with the high hopes of living to be brave men and worthy patriots, dear to God and famous to all ages. So what I take it to mean is like we're ignited by, or like we're motivated by, the study of learning. Like you said, Sam, like admiring a virtue, or like making these like value judgments on like what it is to be brave. And we're get all riled up with hopes of being brave men and worthy patriots.
Sure do.
We get really excited about that. And yeah, and like, I think that ties into being remembered. Trying to like stand for something, you know, like make your work count.
And Paradise Lost is about Adam and Eve, right? I'm just looking at the like little synopsis. Okay, so just from the Wikipedia page, the synopsis is, it's a really long poem. And it's... I could be wrong again, correct me, but I think it's just the story of Adam and Eve and the fall of that. So if we're thinking about value judgments, Eve made a pretty big one. and that's pretty cool.
Oh, shit. There's so much more to research now.
Oh, I know. I know. It's impossible. We'll never hit it all. There's absolutely no way.
You're right. We need to resign ourselves to that because, shit, I didn't even know there was a Milton reference in here. Okay.
I mean, maybe there's not.
Yeah, maybe there's not, although the closeness in quote for this one at least makes me feel kind of confident that it's a reference to Milton. Brave men, dear to God, famous to all ages.
I like the idea that there's a value judgment in Adam and Eve starting out as both dear to God. And then because I'm going to say Eve's braveness, that dearness is lost somehow. Somehow is lost because she disobeyed him.
Yeah.
And they are people who are famous to all of the ages. Who is more famous than Adam and Eve and God?
No one. No one.
Who's more famous than God?
You know what I love is that she and you here in this conversation just included a reference to, not a reference to, sorry, like made a point to talk about the women. Like Milton just says the brave men and patriots, and Jana and you were like, no, brave men and women. We're talking about Eve too.
Well, if we're talking about Adam and Eve, it's not Adam who's brave at all.
No, it's not Adam who's brave at all. Holy shit. Okay, so I was going to say the reason that I took it to be rag as in, and like I also have no fucking idea and am open to all the possibilities. But the reason I think I took it to be rag as in like a ragtime song is that I took all of this run-on sentence to connect to each other. So the hand that did the lone leveling also plays along the monument. And that hand drums this song upon the plastic bag. So it would be like the same thing as say in my head. It would be like the same thing as saying like drums sapoconican on a plastic bag or like drums only skin on a plastic bag. Mm-hmm. It's just like this long ass title where the thing being drummed is this song in my head called The Brave Men and Women So Dear to God and Famous to All of the Ages.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. That's the name of the song.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a named thing for sure. You're going to be sick of us saying this. We say it every fucking episode. But if it's capitalized, it's probably named, right?
Right. Yeah.
Prove us wrong.
Prove us wrong.
I'm sticking with that.
Yeah, I think that that's a reliable enough thing to stick to. So yeah, I was picturing that being the thing that was drummed into the, or like the rhythm that the hand was drumming on the plastic bag.
I don't know. We're only on the first verse and I feel entirely hopeless now.
Oh my God. Like, oh God, I do too.
We're never going to get this.
Oh my God.
There's no way.
It's so hard. It is so hard. That does it for part three of Sapoconican. Thank you guys so much for being here and for being a part of our discussion, especially to those of you guys who've reached out to us. We really appreciate it. Please be one of them. Send us your thoughts and theories to ahopelessendeavor@gmail.com. You could also leave them on Facebook. Our Facebook group is Hopeless Endeavor, Join a Newsome Podcast. You can also send the thoughts and theories and brilliant musings and whatever not so brilliant musings, just like, you know, this song makes me feel sad. To Sam on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is
A Hopeless Endeavor Podcast.
We have a Patreon. Facebook,
Instagram, Patreon.
Yeah. Yeah, our Patreon that I will link to in the show notes. You can just look for A Hopeless Endeavor on there. But we have early episode releases. We have bonus episodes. Check them out. And I think that does it.
Thank you so much. This feels like an unwieldy episode, and I'm sure it will continue to be as we work through the song.
Yeah.
Again, we talked for 2 hours about a verse and a half, so we're trudging along. The seagull is weeping. We're trying. Yeah.
Did we not get to two verses? Did we not finish two verses?
No, we didn't, because we finished the one verse, and then we finished the second half of the first one.
Wait, yeah.
We finished this one, and then we did this one, and that's it.
Okay, yeah. So we finished two verses.
Yes.
In this one episode, we did a verse and a half, you're saying. I see. Yes.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. So yeah. We did a whole verse and a half in these two episodes, the part one and part
yes.
two.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
One recording session. Okay. Confusing shit. Everything is so confusing. My brain is tired.
Okay, that's it. Bye. Thank you.